Chapter 12. Always somewhere to go. Punch it. Equals. Though they both knew there was no escape, Sherokin and Thematica dragged Cadmus Tyro from the wreckage. Ignatius Newman followed, limping, and with a metalled hand pressed to his side where Mysan's blade had sought to gut him. They managed to reach the edge of the ziggurat refinery before the prow of the strike cruiser slammed into Lerna 212. Its descent had seemed ponderous, almost leisurely, but its mass and momentum were devastating. All four warriors were thrown to the deck as it lurched upwards like a tectonic shift. The noise was deafening, a roaring, grinding, crashing thunder without end. The shriek of tortured, buckling metal was the platform's death scream, and a bellow of hatred all in one. Sherokin's stomach lurched as he felt Lerna 212 being dragged downwards by the unstoppable force of the strike cruiser's impact. Its repulsor banks fought to keep the platform in the sky, but that was a hopeless battle. More explosions painted the sky, and blooming clouds of ignited gases rippled outwards to the horizon like an oncoming thunderhead. Sherokin had seen mine fires like that, a cascade of ignition that only ever ended badly. Thematica saw it too.
The crystallized promethium in the atmosphere has reached its flashpoint.
Sherokin sprang to his feet as a towering wall of flame rose up behind them from the ruptured refueling tower. Billions of cubic liters of promethium blasted their confining silos to vapor in an instant, and uncapped geysers of volatile explosive material added to the mix. A tsunami of white-hot liquid flame raced towards them, blinding in its intensity and throwing their shadows out behind them.
"Come on, help me," said Sherokin.
Thematica nodded and helped the Raven Guard warrior lift Tyro's near lifeless body. The air began to spark all around them, as if they'd blundered into a thousand swarms of fireflies. The chemical-rich atmosphere was starting to ignite.
"There's nowhere to go," said Thematica.
But despite his words, he kept going.
"There's always somewhere to go," snapped Sherokin.
"Where?"
grunted Thematica, risking a glance over his shoulder.
"There's a tidal wave of molten promethium racing towards us. The very air is about to combust, and this entire platform is moments away from falling into an acid ocean. I'll keep going to the very end, Brother Sherokin. Have no fear of that. But tell me, where can we go?"
"Wayland!" shouted Newman.
Thematica shook his head.
"Sabic was shot down, Ignatius. We heard it on the Vox," he said. "That is, Alpharius's stormbird blew him out of the sky."
"Wayland!"
repeated Newman, pushing past Thematica. Sherokin turned, and there it was, perforated by gunfire and holed by missile detonations, but still airborne. One of its engines was on fire, but Sabic Wayland's Storm Eagle was as much 10th Legion as its warriors, and it never gave up, never quit fighting, and never left a man behind.
"There's always somewhere to go," said Sherokin.
Leaving Tyro in the care of Newman and Thematica, Sherokin fought his way through the steeply canted crew compartment of the Storm Eagle. Its hull was shaking as though ready to come apart at the seams, and the scream of its tortured engines was that of a man wounded beyond any tolerance of pain. He hauled himself upwards, using hanging stowage straps and buckled stanchions to reach the cockpit. Sabic Wayland wrestled with the controls, fighting the searing thermals trying to swat them from the sky. Sherokin threw himself into the co-pilot's seat. He strapped himself in and did his best not to distract Wayland as he threaded a needle path through the destruction of Lerna 212. The Storm Eagle juddered, and Sherokin felt sure he heard something tear loose from the hull's exterior. The temperature within the cockpit was phenomenal and still rising. It felt like the interior of a blast oven or the heat of a rust desert. The Promethean tsunami was almost upon them.
"Got to break atmosphere, Sabic," he said. "Quickly."
"We can. We will," said Wayland,
the latter as much a request of the aircraft as it was an answer.
"But don't speak to me until we do."
The gunship banked and swooped and dived, its flight path a spiralling, looping nightmare, as Wayland fought to anticipate volcanic eruptions of promethium, collapsing silo towers and blizzards of steelwork caught in fire tornadoes. It felt like the gunship was under fire above a drop zone, but this was worse than any flak storm Sharokin had endured. Flames roared over the armor glass canopy, and he gripped the edges of the seat as the view beyond was entirely obscured.
Throne!
Cried Sharokin.
I said, don't talk!
Sharokin bit back an angry response and forced himself to watch the lunatic path Wayland was flying. He saw a gap ahead, a break in the unending torrent of debris and flames filling the sky. He shouted and pointed, but Wayland had already seen it. Wayland threw the Storm Eagle into a bellowing climb, and Sharokin felt sure the aircraft was going to shake itself apart. Screens shattered on the avionics panel, the armor glass cracked, heat spiked. Sharokin hammered his fist against his chest in a last gesture of defiance in the face of death. He kept hammering until Wayland said, "We're clear." Sharokin opened his eyes and found himself staring into the blackness of the exosphere.
The void was above, and the heat within the cockpit began dropping off rapidly. The Storm Eagle ceased its attempts to shake itself into a mass of components.
"We're clear," repeated Wayland,
and Sharokin let out a long stream of breath.
"Throne, that was incredible flying."
Wayland shrugged and said,
"Who's back there? I couldn't see clear enough against the glare."
"Too few," said Sharokin.
"Thematica and Newman are tending to Cadmus. He's hurt badly. He might not make it back to the Sisyphium."
Wayland pushed out the engines.
"He's Iron Tenth," said Wayland,
as if that explained everything, and Sharokin supposed it did.
"He'll make it."
Sharokin left the flying to Wayland and went aft to check in with Thematica and Newman. The gunship's interior felt horribly empty now. The warriors who'd begun this mission with the prospect of revenge filling their bellies were now ash. Names flashed through Sharokin's mind. Faces. He had lost so many brothers in the 19th Legion, and the brothers of the Sisyphium were no less his kin for having a different genesire. Newman sat propped up in his grav harness, and only the fractional rise and fall of his chest told Sharokin he wasn't dead. He put a hand on Newman's brow, the skin oily and hot, as his body diverted its energies to healing the grievous hurt done by Maesan's churning blade. Sharokin knelt beside the mortally wounded clan captain. Thematica had stripped the few remaining portions of Tyro's shattered plate. From the gory horror of what the mass reactives had done to him, Sharokin suspected another name would soon be added to the Sisyphium's Wall of the Fallen.
"He lives?"
The Ironwrought looked up and said,
"Death's got his claws in deep, aye, but Cadmus won't go without a fight."
"Can I do anything?"
"No. And though it galls me to say it, neither can I. To live or to die will be the captain's choice."
"Then he'll live forever," said Sharokin.
"Your words give me hope, son of Korax," said Thematica,
rocking back onto his haunches.
"You would have made a fine Iron Hands legionary if only you'd had the fortune to be born on Medusa."
Sharokin took the compliment as it was intended, leaving unsaid the fact that he would sooner have let Alpharius kill him than not be a Raven Guard. He pushed himself to his feet and took a seat against the cold metal of the fuselage.
"So, what now for the Sisyphium?" he asked.
"What do you mean?"
"Look how many we lost down there. With all we have left, we can just about fly the ship. But can it fight?"
"So long as the Sisyphium has a crew, it can fight," said Cadmus Tyro, coughing a wad of bloody phlegm. "You hear me, Sharokin?"
"Don't talk, Cadmus," said Thematica. "Save your strength."
"I hear you," said Sharokin.
"I should have heard you," said Tyro. "You warned us of this."
Sharokin didn't answer. Recriminations would achieve nothing, save to tear Tyro's wounds wider.
"You now have a voice aboard my ship," said Tyro. "Use it when you must, as an equal. The Sisyphium is no longer an Iron Hands vessel. It's a ship of warriors, and every voice matters."
"I'll use my voice, Cadmus. Count on it,"
Sherakin promised. Tyro turned his head, and Sherakin felt the heat of the clan captain's gaze. It bored into him like a las cutter, demanding truth to be the next thing passing his lips.
What did Altharius mean?
Said Tyro.
About what?
You know what, grunted Tyro. Why does Magnus the Red want you alive?
I don't know, said Sherakin. I never served alongside the 15th, let alone met the Crimson King.
Should I believe that?
Why would you not? Countered Sherakin. Altharius is a master manipulator, a purveyor of lies, untruths, and misinformation. Nothing he says can be believed.
Tyro nodded, and his eyes squeezed shut as racking pain convulsed him. Thematica held his shoulders as the wave subsided.
There's truth in that,
agreed Tyro.
Let me cling to that on this day of lies.
What did he mean about deliverance? Asked Sherakin.
The Sisyphium hung in the void like a beaten ingot fresh from the fire. Its hull was gnarled and pocked with recent impacts, its blunt, pugnacious prow still crumpled from the impact with the Andronius. Wayland guided the Storm Eagle towards it with gentle manoeuvres, fearful the gunship might fall to pieces were he to move too suddenly. Even a glance told him the Sisyphium had been in a desperate fight since he had last laid eyes upon her.
What happened?
Said Sherakin, his humours black since his return from the crew compartment.
That,
said Wayland, pointing to where the gutted wreck of the Iron Heart smouldered just beyond the Sisyphium's quarterdeck. Even from here, it was clear to see the two ships had been tearing at one another like rabid dogs in a cage. That the Iron Heart should have come after the Sisyphium was no surprise, but that the outcome appeared to have been so one-sided was. The Iron Heart had been pummeled mercilessly, disemboweled by weapons fire and emptied of life with repeated broadsides.
Throne, I never knew that Tarsa had the heart of a void warrior, said Sharokin.
Vulcan's sons are full of surprises,
said Wayland, guiding the Storm Eagle towards the Ford's embarkation deck, the same deck upon which they had welcomed the false Shadrach Medjuson. That an enemy Primarch had trod the halls of the Sisyphium sent a horror of violation through Wayland. The chamfered opening to the embarkation deck grew steadily in the cracked glass of the cockpit. Wayland nudged the controls, angling the gunship to pass seamlessly through the centre of the integrity field. He felt the lurch of ship gravity and gently set the Storm Eagle down on the nearest launch rail. He let out a breath it felt like he'd been holding since realizing the truth of the betrayal visited upon them. Just being back on the Sisyphium renewed Wayland, gave him hope that something good might be salvaged from this disastrous mission. If not even the trap of a Primarch could lay low the crew of the Sisyphium, then perhaps they would live forever. Then he remembered Ferus Manus, and his hope was crushed. He followed Sharokin back into the crew compartment. Atesh Tarsa was already on the gunship, as were a gaggle of Medicae servitors slathered in dark fluids. They lifted Cadmus onto a suspensor stretcher as Tarsa set up numerous drips and applied pressure bandages. The apothecary's dark skin was bathed in sweat, but after a void fight like the one that had ended the Iron Heart, Wayland wasn't surprised. Tarsa glanced up, and Wayland saw wariness in his crimson eyes, quickly masked. Then the apothecary hurried from the gunship with Cadmus Tyro upon the stretcher. Garuda perched on its edge, but flew off as soon as it began to move. Thematica, Wayland, Sharokin, and Newman followed him from the Storm Eagle, and Newman fell to his knees as soon as he set foot on the deck. The Avernii veteran bent to kiss the deck like a superstitious feral worlder. Wayland called after Tarsa.
You fought well, apothecary, said Wayland.
Tarsa shook his head and gestured to a presence just out of sight behind the Storm Eagle's smoking engine. Something massive took a heavy step around the gunship. and Wayland retreated before the towering armored machine that came into view. It was Brother Bombastus, who had last walked as a dreadnought. But this was no dreadnought, and Bombastus was dead. This was a nightmarish fusion of technology and biology and mechanical necromancy. The towering construct had no sarcophagus, merely a cable-wound cocoon of raw sutures and bare flesh. At its heart, bound into its workings by crude biomechanical interfaces, were the ruined scraps of meat and bone and hate that once commanded the Sisypheum.
"Tarsa didn't kill the Ironheart," said Ulrak Branthan. "I did."
That was The Seventh Serpent by Graham McNeil, read by Jonathan Keeble.